Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is a land where even the gods are bound by oaths and prophecies. At the dawn of time, war between the gods and the titans left the world of Thalia forever changed. Thousands of years later, the first mortals arrived, carried by ship and dragon. They were champions who overthrew the titans 500 years ago and forged the Oath of Peace. But the power of the oath has waned, and now the titans seek vengeance. You are one of the heroes called by prophecy to end the conflict once and for all. Poets will sing of your deeds for centuries to come, if you survive.
The dragons pull the ships?
Sure.
Okay.
By dragon and ship, yeah, it's, you get your choice. Okay. Dragons might move a little faster than ships, but I don't know.
What's that from?
That is Odyssey of the Dragon Lords. So that was a adventure book produced for the 5th edition of the world's greatest role-playing game. But the reason I bring that up is because that was successfully kickstarted by James Olin. And James Olin is a kind of veteran designer and writer for a lot of really famous PC role-playing games. So he's known for Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, Knights of the Old Republic, and Dragon Age Origins.
All games that my Twitter feed never shuts up about, but I have no interest in playing.
Right. But they're all good. The stories and characters are great. And on those games, so he's got a good sense of that. So he is going to found, in Texas, they're going to found a Wizards of the Coast game studio.
Okay.
So he's going to be the lead. I think that's maybe what made him a good choice, is that he's got his one foot in kind of both realms. Like he enjoys the tabletop and writing for tabletop, but is also very good at producing.
So just to clarify,
yes.
Wizards of the Coast is making some kind of non-tabletop related games. Okay.
Yes. So, it's Wizards of the Coast, so they have access to Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons, but this is going to be completely original IP.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it looks like they might be trying to experiment with a setting and something on a PC game, PC RPG first. And if it is popular and successful, then of course they have the option to move it into a card game, into the tabletop. So it's an interesting order to do things, probably the most expensive way to do it.
Oh, maybe.
Because developing video games is a lot more, I would imagine, than tabletop. So they'll focus on original IPs that are outside of both of those established IPs of D&D and Magic the Gathering. So Olin said he didn't think he'd be coming back to the gaming industry so soon, but when Wizards offered him this position, he saw it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and is their mutual love of RPGs, world-building, and interactive storytelling was a perfect match. We hope for good things. I mean, at least there's competent writers, and there's a competent writer and director at the head of this. It just depends on what ultimately Hasbro is going to let go through.
Yeah. So I guess it sounds like this new company is kind of like part of Wizards of the Coast, which of course is owned by Hasbro. So Hasbro's kind of going to have like main say in a lot of stuff, or at least not like nitty gritty stuff, but kind of high level stuff. Again, it's not great for radio, but I raised my eyebrow a couple times at that original IP, and I'm kind of like, well, okay, sure. I think what you mean is like, it's not going to be an existing Magic setting or an existing D&D setting. But I was like, okay, as much crap as I get Wizards of the Coast, like Dungeons and Dragons, maybe to a lesser extent, but Magic at least comes up with great settings pretty much every other year or every year.
Yeah, right.
And I've fallen off the Magic bandwagon, but I was into that quite heavily. So I kind of was curious at like it's original IP, and I'm like, well, you've done a lot of those. Why not just say non-Magic or whatever? I don't know. It seemed a little strange the way to phrase it.
And so I think they are definitely experimenting with kind of cross-pollinating between those things, because that was funny that they did for the first time ever a Magic the Gathering setting for Dungeons and Dragons. There was a for Magic the Gathering, they are creating, I mean, gorgeous art and very interesting settings, and why isn't any of that playable on the tabletop?
Lot of people said that when they came up with that Ravnica Guild book, and I think there was an unofficial or maybe not hardback produced thing of Zendikar, maybe. And it's been a long time since I've played Magic and kind of fell off it, as I said. From what I remember, the Magic team produces rather substantial like world Bibles to make sure that, you know, artists are depicting kind of the various species correctly, or kind of like, okay, this is what landscapes look like, this is kind of not how society works, but like here's what the creatures look like, here's what settings look like, because they got to come up with those five different lands for each set, and they come up with extensive books on just making sure everything is unified. And a couple other people said, why not use that for D&D settings?
Right, because...
Or another game if you want.
It is strange, because that does seem like quite a waste, because I don't think they really get very explored, if you're talking about like tournament players for Magic, they don't care. They're just looking at the, oh, this is plus three.
What does it do?
So yeah, I was curious to see what that's actually going to mean. And, you know, game development is a long haul. So it's going to be years before we see any of the fruits of this. And if we see if it's popular and then if they develop it for the tabletop. So this is not going to be a short.
Good point.
Short process. And I thought the lore, the setting lore for the Dragon Lords was interesting. I looked at it. It's got gorgeous art. Of course, all the stuff that he's worked on. He knows some good artists. So there was gorgeous art for that. But yeah, just didn't get excited about, would I ever play this? I would look at the book.
In the world's greatest role-playing game, let me go gag myself with a spoon. what do you basically do? You fight stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go from zero to hero, and the expectation is, hey, you're going to be the people that change the world, because that's what a lot of people like to play, and more power to them. So I think that's what the majority of D&D settings have to allow.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested to hear, how are things going with Ironsworn?
Not at all, because things have been stupid busy at work, and I've not really had much of a break, and I've kind of been thinking about other stuff. I guess where I've gotten so far is, hey, I got myself a notebook. I'm pretty sure I've set on making a character. Like, I'm pretty sure my character is done. That's one of the thing. One of the ways you can approach Ironsworn, I guess there's two ways you can approach it for a solo game or kind of any game, is you can do character first, or you can do world building first, because the author says you can adapt this material to play any other setting you want. You're just going to have to, like, of course, tweak some stuff. But there is an existing setting in Ironsworn, which you kind of build and change by answering like 8 questions. And there are things like religion, kind of mythology, so the way society works and stuff like that. And I forget specifics, but for each question, you're given 3 pre-written answers or the option to kind of write in your own. And of course, the author says some of the choices are going to contradict each other. It's kind of up to you to figure out how they contradict or how they resolve. Or like one of the first questions, I think, was kind of ancestry. Like, where is your character from? And one of the options, the one that I chose, was, okay, you were originally part of like this raider team, I think it's called like the Skull or something, that forced the other people off the mainland, and they escaped to the Ironlands, and hey, you are a descendant of one of them, so that's why people kind of don't like you. Like, I forget what the other options are, but every option came with what's called like a quest starter, which, and the one I picked was, great, a band of Skull have just arrived on the mainland. What are you going to do about it? Like, where do your loyalties lie in this?
Cool.
So, one of the other ones was like iron. Something about the setting is like, what is weird about the Ironlands? And the one I picked was, there are these massive iron pillars that just kind of grow up out of the ground that no one really knows what they're there for. You're given, it's kind of like that fruitful void kind of thing, where like you're given these answers, and based on them, you kind of pick whichever one kind of sparks your interest. And then you put all those 8 things together, and you're like, oh, this is my version of the Ironlands. So I've made all those choices, and I have to transcribe them into a book. But again, the author very nicely has all these like printout sheets where, like, instead of just going through it in the book, you can actually print out this little booklet and have your setting all ready to go. So that's why, like, you could use this stuff for other settings. It would just be on the player to come up with those kind of evocative questions answer stuff. So I think I'm all ready to go with that. I got the setting, I got my character, I picked my like my 3 feats kind of thing. And I still have to pick my vows, like the goals that you're working towards. And that's kind of where I got hung up before. The stuff provided in the book, I think I'm just going to, for this first run, just go with kind of the bog standard. Oh, this was suggested from background. Where does your character start? And again, each starting location gives you a quest starter. Like, one of the ones is like Hinterlands, kind of like, oh, things aren't that great up here. A settlement has just been taken over. People have been kicked out. What are you going to do with these people? Are you going to try and like retake their settlement, try to find them a new home and stuff like that? So I think I might go with like those 2.
Nice. Yeah, I took a look at the PDF and I really liked how the character sheet handled a lot of tracking, especially for solo play.
Yeah.
Because you've got like momentum tracks and things that you can just use paper clips to clip to the side. And also how you marked using each box of certain levels of
I think it was the vow or bonds.
Yeah, and you have four marks that you can make. So you're essentially making an asterisk, like you're drawing an X and then a cross. And you can like visually see that very well, like how far something has progressed. And I think that looks very interesting.
Yeah, I've said it before. I'm really impressed with how kind of clean the layout of that PDF is, because like it's all just kind of like black text on white background with dark gray call-out boxes. Mm-hmm. And that looks really slick. And yeah, as you said, the character sheet is really well organized, and those trackers on the side for just sticking a paperclip on it, or yeah, as you said, the hash marks, where it looks like once you kind of understand the rules, it looks like it would be really easy to at a glance kind of figure out and see what is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think very, very thoughtful design, and yeah, very, very nice graphically.
And again, it's pay what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, to me, unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah, I'll be looking forward to hearing how things go.
All right, well, then I'll have to do stuff during the next week, so I have something to report on next week.
Right. So did you read the news about Judges Guild?
I did, and it's obviously important. Mm-hmm. However, I am not intimately familiar with any Judges Guild games or property, so it was kind of like, I don't know what this relates to. Mm. And just kind of read it and kept going.
Yeah, it's so they've been around since 76, so pretty old school, and they've worked with a lot of the big kind of independent producers and people that are kind of supporting Dungeons and Dragons, basically. And yeah, so the son of the founder posted some anti-Semitic remarks.
Basically went full on Nazi, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so the first reaction was from Bat in the Attic. He talked to the son, who's now, I guess, the owner, said, you know, we're ending the relationship because of this. And then shortly after that, Frog God Games, who's had a 20-year relationship with them, ended their relationship. And then the last people to kind of speak up are Drive-Thru RPG.
Yep, so I did see that all the Judges Guild products got yanked.
Right. So that's that's really unfortunate. And that's, I don't know.
don't you kind of have to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I'm going to phrase it wrong, but, like, everything is political, and not saying anything means you are condoning that behavior.
Mm. But to put to death probably his father's life's work because of some kid that spent too much time listening to the wrong radio station is pretty unfortunate. I mean,
oh, it is. Yeah. It is. But actions have to have consequences. And it's kind of like that, oh, boo-hoo, well, then don't be a Nazi.
Yeah, well, and these the individual publishers that work with them are surviving this, and that's basically, you know, I think what the best thing to come out of this is that maybe now they'll reform
a group
or find somebody else that, you know, that can support that output. That was unfortunate, and they Judges Guild even did a Kickstarter, the City State of the Invincible Overlord, and raised about 85K back in 2019, and has not fulfilled anything. And maybe
back in 2019,
maybe will not.
Maybe
I'll think all the way back. So we'll see. We'll see how things go, because that's a huge.
Didn't realize they had that Kickstarter. I wonder what's going to happen with that. If people are going to start like canceling the pledges and demanding refunds and stuff like that, especially since I don't know what their anticipated timeline of delivery was. So I'm not going to say they're late. And back in 2019 is like technically could be 2 or even 3 months ago.
Right.
So
that was unfortunate news and not good for the kind of OSR, kind of old school, you know, gamers, because that's going to be a disruption to everything that's going on. But on a happier note, Onyx Path Publishing announced that they're going to do a second edition of Hunter the Vigil.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
So that looks fun. So that's going to be based on a Kickstarter. So they're going to do a Kickstarter for it. And yeah, I guess the first draft is already written.
Okay.
And that's going to be released through the course of the Kickstarter. So people are going to see kind of where the rules are at and everything. And they're going to add, in addition to the 7 compacts and 7 conspiracies that are included in this new edition, they're going to add things like storyteller support to give you a chronicle-rich kit, the Slasher Chronicle is inspired by the slasher film genre, of course. Expanded lore for the Hunter, and it will also include 2 new compacts, so Sworn and 9 Stars, and a new conspiracy called Council of Bones. Mm. So it looks like they're offering a lot of new tools and interesting ways to work with it. So they're going to release chapters throughout the Kickstarter. So it's planned for delivery February 2022. But they'll do an ebook and a which I guess is another word for PDF? I don't know.
Or ebook means like Kindle or Amazon Fire
with,
or whatever.
Something with DRM.
Yeah, something DRM that you can't use as a PDF. Yeah.
Right. And then hardcover edition as well. We'll take a look at that when that comes. Yeah. So that'll be on the 10th anniversary of Onyx Path. They were founded in 2012. So the release of the second edition will be 2022. So they'll be 10 years old.
Nice. Yeah. As someone whose sympathies leaned much more towards the monsters, Hunter didn't interest me all that much.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because that's kind of, it's a little anti-monster.
It's a little anti-monster. Yeah.
So it looks interesting, and they did a nice job kind of presenting some of the materials. It should be a good-looking Kickstarter, so we'll keep an eye on that.
Well, speaking of Kickstarters, mm-hmm. I found out today that the Trophy Gold Kickstarter, I'm a stretch goal.
Oh, nice.
Not exclusively. No, I'll just say that right now. So the last stretch goal at 150K, I believe, is something called like the Ruins of Old Kaldur, mm-hmm. and it's a mega dungeon. Mm. The people running the Kickstarter have collected a group of people to collaboratively write this mega dungeon thing, and I am one of the people. Excellent. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, very cool. So what do I have to do, pledge 50,000, 25,000? I want to hit that level. So you know.
I think as of this recording, we're at like 120.
Oh, cool.
It's not impossible, but it is still kind of a stretch. Hence why it's called a stretch goal.
They're stretching. Well, that'd be great if that happens. Yeah. Well,
not sure what I'm writing yet, but mm-hmm. again, it's going to be a collaborative effort. So I might be handed like, okay, here's your section of the dungeon detailing. Also in Trophy Gold news, the Trophy Gold Incursion Writing Contest mm-hmm. is going. It started, what, February 10th, and it goes until, I believe, like April 13th. So you have a decent chunk of time to write something. Nice. It's got to be no more than 5,000 words. And like with the Trophy Dark one, it's anonymous. So when you email your Google Doc or a link to your Google Doc, you can't have your name anywhere on it. And it's just going to be sort of blind, not blind chosen, but they don't want to be influenced by knowing who people are.
Right, right.
That is not going to be published. Mm-hmm. in the Trophy Gold Kickstarter because there's not enough time. Mm-hmm. First prize is like, what, $500 and that slip case of all the trophy hardcover books. Second prize is like $200 and again, a trophy slip case of all three of those books. So I'm going to try and enter that as well because I hopefully have enough time to do it.
Yes, good, good.
Writing a Trophy Gold set is a lot different from writing a Trophy Dark Incursion. Because mm-hmm. where Trophy Dark had those five rings and you kind of progress to the end, Trophy Gold is a lot more OSR-ish, where one of the things you're supposed to, I guess, put together is a kind of a location flow chart. Mm-hmm. Because you have these distinct locations or sets that could be anything from like a room to an entire level of a dungeon, as long as they're kind of thematically linked and kind of discrete from the other places. And what you do is you have between like 3 and 6 of those kind of locations. And each one has things like descriptions, traps, monsters, treasures, a couple other things. So, and then the diagram kind of shows how the player characters get from one point to the other. So much like that mothership PDF I was talking about before, mm-hmm. it's kind of like an information graphic rather than a map.
Right.
But you could have a map if you wanted to. I've been thinking about what to do for that because like with the Trophy Dark one, they said, okay, it's normally dark fantasy, but you could do anything you want. Oh, you could do right. cyberpunk, futuristic, modern. I thought, oh, cool, let me try one of these many horror movie-themed incursions I've been spewing off on Twitter. Then I realized Trophy Gold has a couple of assumptions where gold mm-hmm. is a lot more valuable to the characters. And if characters return home without having collected enough gold, like their debts consume them, then they get sent off to debtor's prison. So that pushes the characters further into the adventure. But unless your setting has things like those debts... Mm-hmm. And unless the characters care a lot about gold, and one of the other things is you can actually harvest monster carcasses for gold. Mm. So those three things not limit the setting, but I was like, great, let me do kind of like a modern horror slasher movie. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to work because the escaping from like an alien invasion doesn't work with these mechanics of collecting gold, harvesting monsters, and right. having debts.
Yes, yes.
Like, it works pretty well with cyberpunk because mm-hmm. cyberpunk characters often have these debts that are there trying to pay off. And I mean, you could like rip cybernetic parts out of mm-hmm. people, Battle yeah. Angel Alita style, which is kind of gruesome. So I think it's less flexible than Trophy Dark, mm-hmm. but kind of more involved. Hmm. But if you can find out a way to make Trophy Gold work for other genres, I'd be very interested in hearing about it.
That kind of greed and debt limitation, yeah, does put it in certain worlds. So it would work. Yeah, you could definitely pull cyberpunk, like you're debted in a cyberpunk world. But yeah, you're right. Alien invasion. It's like, damn, they're here too soon. I haven't paid my car off.
Exactly. Well, let's go harvest some alien parts. Yeah. Take it to the car dealership. Can I get my car?
Another thing on a Kickstarter that I saw that's another come on.
Oh, really? Okay.
Campaign is, I'm forgetting the name of it, and it's good because I'm not going to link to it. I'm not going to give anything to it, but it's a miniatures game. It's like a miniatures board game, kind of. It looks like combat, like skirmish style game based on the Marvel IP, Marvel superheroes IP, which doesn't need kickstarted. I think it's got a built-in audience. So again, another one of these things where it's like you're paying for this license and I guess you're addicted to that pre-order system. So you're going to make sure that you make enough money to make this a profitable thing. But it's a chibi version. So it's like chibi Hulk and chibi Thor. And yeah, it's odd. I think they've worked with the studio they've worked with in the past to do like Super Dungeon Explorer. And some of that is, I think, who's involved in that. And
which I was real interested in until I found out what a crap company Soda Pop Miniatures is.
Oh, right, right, yeah. So I'm not sure if it's them, but it's that style. It's that look of that, yeah, those chibi miniatures. So again, I was like, why are you doing this?
And they're the Funko Pops of miniatures. Yeah, no thanks.
And why is this on Kickstarter? Because it's, I know why. So basically Kickstarter is breaking its own rules because, you know, they're looking for people that need a kickstart to get something going. But when they see these $2-4 million, you know, dollar campaigns that they get 10% of or whatever, they're like, well, you know, it's good for our company as well. So I really don't like them kind of folding on their ideals and their probably mission statement. But you were also talking about a superhero.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to get the information wrong because I'm honestly not that into superheroes. But I think due to the success of things like Critical Role and Harmon Quest, question mark, I forget what network it's going to be on, but there's going to be some kind of celebrity-run DC hero role-playing game show that I think is involving Freddie Prinze Jr. somehow as one of the hosts. I don't
know. Why wouldn't it? So that must be a weird, the corporate decision making going on there must have been very interesting, because if it's DC, that's Warner Brothers, right? They can work, who knows, like
I have no idea,
the television and maybe they're starting a streaming service
I wouldn't be surprised if it was on a streaming service, but yeah, I think you said corporate, which made me think, like, I kind of thought it was only a matter of time before Critical Role wasn't the first, because we had Harmon Quest and we had Geek and Sundry stuff, which I guess wasn't super corporate. It was only a matter of time before corporations said, we want some of that as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't care that much about superheroes. I don't care that much about celebrities. So it's like, who are these people? I don't know. They're not a draw. Whatever. I guess some people are going to be drawn in by this.
Right.
But I also noticed that they're playing a role-playing game from the 80s. I think it was called like DC Heroes or something like that. And I am kind of confused about that choice. Well, on the one hand, it's not D&D, so more power to you.
Right.
But yeah, you're going to run a game from the 80s and you're going to have a show that's kind of hosted or run by, I believe the phrase was like, celebrity DC comic fans.
Wow.
Which is kind of okay. And the other thing that kind of like wasn't a red flag, but I'm like looking askance at it, was like, oh, the first season, the story will see the players. And I'm like, so you have it planned out already.
Right.
Which I guess, so I don't know. If you want to script it, I mean, the implication was not this is scripted, but that's kind of the feeling I got from it, which I understand it's a form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's different from a home game of, where you role play. So I kind of see them as different animals.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it might have that reality show. People make the assumption, oh, this is all just captured candidly. This is real. Real video. And it's like, oh, actually, no, it's completely scripted.
Yeah. Can we do that take again? Yeah. Okay, now roll a 20 this time.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see the people chasing and kind of the copycats of Critical Role, because I don't think what they did is reproducible, because it's an odd combination of things that just struck people as compelling. I think having interesting voices done by professional voice actors, portraying a fantasy setting with original characters, and it's not something, it felt like, you know, very grassroots and for the people and for the nerd people, not something big and corporate, even though they were playing Dungeons & Dragons eventually. Yeah. I don't think they're going to be able to recreate that success, so we're going to see a lot of these ugly, hollow copies of things, and like, I'm a professional nerd. Or at least I play one on TV.
I got nothing against professional dungeon masters, because like, or people who run games, because if you can leverage that skill into money, more power to go and do it. Like, heck, I tried doing that. It reminded me of something else I saw, having mentioned before about how I thought it was kind of unfortunate that Critical Role wasn't playing other games. Someone pointed out that they're actually playing Monster Hearts. They're doing a one-shot of Monster Hearts, which I am kind of conflicted about. And I realize it's an irrational response. It's one of those things where I'm like, wow, I really like this game. And if I'm being completely honest, feel I have some kind of ownership over it, which is absolutely not true. And given my feelings on Critical Role, part of me says, they're going to play it wrong. And the other part of me says, you know what? It doesn't matter. So what?
Right.
So I'm kind of wrestling with that. And have not decided whether or not I will try and watch it.
I can't wait to hear the adorable voices that they do.
That also kind of...
I think it's going to turn into more like a Saturday morning cartoon, like Monster High kids show.
You know what? It might,
right.
Which is fine. Like, ours was way better. Just saying it right now. Shame we didn't record any of that. But we'd have to put, like, I don't know, kind of graphic depiction warnings all over that thing. But the other thing I watched, I think they have a segment called, like, Handbook Helper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be blunt here. I couldn't deal with the little hamburger helper theme song they sang at the video beginning of that video. I'm like, anyway, and they went over the basics of Monster Hearts, and again, it irritated me that they were calling it a skill check because it is not,
right.
And it was irritating me that they were calling it a fail on the die when it is not. But again, I am at least hopefully cognizant enough to realize those are irrational reactions, and it doesn't matter. But still, I still have those reactions.
Monster Hearts belongs to the normies now, dude. You got to deal with that. It makes me curious to see the interaction, because that game allows for a lot of really interesting, like, social conflict, and then the, you know, turning someone on mechanics, and, you know, rolling for hot and cold, like shutting someone down and turning someone on is really interesting in a storytelling roleplay setting. But if you don't have anywhere to go with that, or if you're, you know, worried about what your viewers are thinking because you're not playing that cute elf.
There is that. And like I've said before, there's no wrong way to play apart from something that your table doesn't enjoy.
Right. All right. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, where I'm spewing out endless horror movie titles that get hopefully turned into trophy incursions. That's Hivemind, HYVEMYND. Hivemind across pretty much all social media.
And I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon, so you can find that on both Twitch and YouTube at Abuse Cartoons, and follow the cartoon on Twitter at Abuse Cartoons. And the archive is available on gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you want to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website. Follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. There's also a YouTube channel and Twitch. And if you'd like to support the podcast and hear more of this and hear more of everything and see wonderful actual plays and get some good reviews, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. So that's all for this week. We'll be back again. Bye.
Later, mortals. On and on, some Sonic.